ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 सो वी आर कैरिंग ऑन विथ the purpose of the human form of life, and the mechanism by which we can get or achieve the perfection. After describing the process of varna and ashram, which pertains to our material activity, how to be engaged, and what makes us impelled to do certain things which are like carrying out our desires. What are the causes, or what are the impelling factors that cause our desire? So, the four varnas and ashramas, they are meant for the spiritual progress of the embodied soul. Now Narad Muni suddenly, instead of going through the other aspect, he is taking care of the sannyasa ashram. Leaving the grihastha ashram or the householder life to be much of greater importance. So he is describing the sannyasa ashram and the entitlement as the behavior of a perfect person. Behavior of a perfect person. How a perfect person should behave. Means, sannyasi is supposed to be the crown jewel of the human society, because he is renounced for perfection, so he must have achieved some perfection. So what kind of symptoms we should look for in a sannyasi? So this 13th chapter describes the regulative principles for sannyasis and also describes the history of an avadhuta. Today we learn another meaning of avadhuta, means one who is scattered. In the 10th canto we were reading about killing of Keshi demon, and Keshi is in the form of a horse, and his mane, which is of the long hairs, this Keshi demon has the hair scattered, so it was called avadhuta. And generally the avadhutas also have hair scattered, but they are like Rastafarians, or what they call jata. They don't care for their hairs. Now, let's see. It concludes with a description of a for perfection for the student in the spiritual advancement. Sri Narad Muni has been describing the symptoms of various ashram and varnas. Now in this chapter he specifically describes the regulative principles to be followed by sannyasis. After retiring from family life, one should accept the status of vanaprastha, in which he must formally accept the body as the means of existence, but gradually forget the bodily necessities of life. After vanaprastha life, having left home, one should travel to different places as a sannyasi. Without bodily comforts and free from dependence on anyone, with respect to bodily necessities, one should travel everywhere, wearing almost nothing, actually walking naked. without association with ordinary human society, one should beg alms and always be satisfied in himself. One should be a friend to every living entity and very peaceful in Krishna consciousness. A sannyasi should travel alone in this way, not caring for life or death, waiting for the time when he will leave this material body. He should not indulge in unnecessary books or add a profession like astrology, and nor should he try to become a great orator. He should also give up the path of unnecessary argument and should not depend on anyone under any circumstances. He should not try to allure people into becoming his disciples just so that the number of his disciples may increase. He should give up the habit of reading many books as means of livelihood, and he should not attempt to increase number of temples and mathas or monasteries. When a sannyasi thus becomes completely independent, peaceful and equipoised, he can select the destination he desires after the death and follow the principles by which to reach this destination. Although fully learned, he should always remain silent, like a dumb person, travel like a restless child. In this regard, Narada Muni describes a meeting between Prahlad Maharaj and a saintly person who had adopted the mode of a python. In this way, he described the symptoms of a Paramahamsa. A person who has attained the Paramahamsa stage knows very well the distinction between the matter and spirit. He is not at all interested in gratifying the material senses, for he is always deriving pleasure from the devotional service to the Lord. He is not very anxious to protect his material body, being satisfied with whatever he attains by the grace of the Lord. He is completely independent of material happiness and distress, and thus he is transcendental to all regulative principles. Sometimes he accepts severe austerities, and sometimes he accepts material opulence. His only concern is to satisfy Krishna, and for that purpose he can do anything and everything without reference to the regulative principles. He is never to be equated with materialistic man, nor is subject to the judgment of such man. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shraga Chakshumilitandena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Chutapada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sarjatam Sadhana Raghunatham Tantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lalita Shri Vishakam Chamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Vimundo Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Shri Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusate Devi Pranamami Shri Hariye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vanda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Narada Muni said, a person able to cultivate spiritual knowledge should renounce all material connections and merely keeping the body inhabitable. He should travel from one place to another, passing only one night at each village. In this way, without dependence in regard to the needs of the body, the sannyasi should travel all over the world. Then he describes that a person in renounced order of life, how should he wear the dress himself? Maybe a loincloth or whatever it may be required to the changing society, but he should be unattached. It is said a sannyasi should not accept even a danda. A danda is a symbol for his commitment of the soul to the Supreme Soul by mind, words and action. So there are three dandas. The fourth one is the jiva danda that is being tied up and wrapped around. So he considers the present body is not the real. The danda body is the real. So he said he is materially dead. So he can't pamper the body. A sannyasi completely satisfied in the self should live on the alms, beg from door to door, not being dependent on any person or any place. He should always be friendly, well-wisher to all living beings, and be peaceful, unalloyed devotee of Narayan. In this way, he should move from one place to another. Sukadeva Goswami was staying just for the time that is taken for milking the cows. It's 10 minutes. That's about it. And he would move. Whether he receives the arm or not, doesn't matter. But sannyasi must travel. There are instructions that they should go to the places of householders just to purify their places. But nowadays, you know, they can't go even. Because people want security for their property. So there is a sign, be aware of dogs. Keep out, trespassers will be prosecuted. You name it, they have it. So, even this ashram is discouraged. So how is it possible to make adjustment? The sannyasi should always try to see the Supreme pervading everything and see everything including this universe resting on the Supreme. Well, that's the business for everyone. Why on the sannyasi? But, anyway, because he is the top of the society, naturally he should become exemplary. During the unconscious and conscious, and between the two, he should try to understand the self and be fully situated in the self. In this way he should realize that the conditioned and liberated stages of life are only illusory and not actually factual. With such a higher understanding, he should see only the absolute truth pervading everywhere. Even a sannyasi has to consider conditioned life or liberated life to be useless. Why is liberated life to be useless? Can somebody explain that? Let me read again. During unconscious and consciousness, and between the two. What is in between the two? Consciousness and subconscious means brain. Alright? He should try to understand the self to be fully situated in the self. In this way he should realize that the conditional and liberated stages of life are only illusory and not actually factual. Means, a sannyasi should be a devotee. He should not try for separate liberation. He should not try separately for liberation. Rather, he should be well convinced confirmed in going back home back to Godhead with the acts of devotional service. He can't think even in the dream that he is liberated, he is free, and he has nothing to do, or he has become God. The Mayavadi sannyasis may feel like that, but Bhagavatam denies this. You can't afford to be hanging around like Trishanku, hanging in oblivion. No, you need a definite target. This target is the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of God. They are definite. So any misconception about the Absolute Truth, which is not including the devotional service, a sannyasi should refrain from it. So he is not interested in liberation. A pure devotee who is fully realized is not interested in liberation. And liberation is also illusory. Now, how much is being expected? Srila Prabhupada says, the unconscious state is nothing but ignorance, darkness of material existence, and in the conscious state one is awake. The marginal state between consciousness and unconsciousness has no permanent existence, means the dreams have no permanent existence. The dreams should not be taken for granted. Otherwise the sentiments, our attachment, they make us believe something with which is not factual. Sometimes people dream of Krishna. And they think that life purpose is fulfilled, and they ignore devotional service. No, I have darshan. Some people can become obsessed. Oh, I can call Krishna anytime I want to have darshan. As if he became his slave. No. It doesn't have any permanent existence. A pure devotee who has been equiposed both in consciousness, subconsciousness and unconscious state in the same material body. Material body is unconscious. It's only the soul which is awakened. For that awakened soul, what is the difference? He is always in rapt attention about the Supreme Personality of God. And therefore we should understand that he is not interested in liberation or the results of the so-called knowledge or meditation. He is not interested in that. He is interested in causeless devotional service. Ahaituki aprakihata. Only by which the Supreme will be satisfied. That is his business. So, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, Mukti, Lady Mukti is standing at the doorsteps with folded hands and telling a pure devotee, my dear sir, how can I serve you? And the devotee tells, thank you Mataji, but I don't have time. I don't need it. Alright? So in this way, we have to think. Therefore, one who is advanced in understanding of the self should understand that consciousness and unconsciousness are but illusion. Wow! Consciousness and unconsciousness both are illusion. Right now, we are all conscious, aren't you? It is illusion. How? How it is illusion?
It is illusion only if we are not conscious of the presence of the Lord.
Or, in other words, If we are materially conscious, that is not wanted. We should be spiritually conscious. Consciousness is the symptom of life which is filled with spirit. So, unless spiritual consciousness is awakened, you can not go to sleep anymore. You don't require the sleep. Prabhupada was sleeping for how many days? I mean, how many hours?
Couple of hours.
Maximum four. Maximum four. When everybody is sleeping, he would be writing, and you know, at this advanced age, where you know, how much energy is required to perform all this task? How much pressure he might have? But because he was oblivious by proper situation of the soul. So that is, so unconsciousness means total ignorance. And consciousness materially is also ignorance. And the dream is also another cheating factor in between. Because dream comes according to the material perception. If we are materially attached, all our dreams are materially motivated. If we are spiritually attached, spiritual dreams may come. They may enthuse us. But don't be cheated, because let's see whether the effect is everlasting or not. Whether we are becoming Krishna consciousness more or not. What is the benefit of our spiritual dreams otherwise? We can't underestimate. If it is real, factual, then it should manifest. Why only dream? When we chant Hare Krishna, Prabhupada was saying that Krishna was dancing on our tongues. He was dreaming what he was doing.
He was feeling ecstatic. They're saying that the holy name was chanted.
Yes. Because he was saying that holy name generates the form of the Lord. He was advanced. He was chanting purely for the benefit of all, so that ignorance can be removed. How many people have been benefited by Prabhupada? Is it not? That's a real benefit. So Prabhupada was not dreaming. Prabhupada was seeing factually Krishna dancing on the tongue. Because the holy name and the form of the Lord are non different. Achintya, inconceivably, oneness is there. So, do you know the story of dreams? The whole life is a dream? You know it? Tell me. We forgot. Okay, take more prasadam. If you take more prasadam, you will never forget. Alright? There are a lot of discussion by Srila Prabhupada, and devotees wouldn't understand. Prabhupada said, yes, life is like a dream. But you say, it is temporary. It's not false. So how could it be dream? So he explains, Ya nisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagrati sanyam. To the awakened soul, whatever he sees around, whatever he sees around, how does he perceive? An awakened soul thinks that general people in general, they are sleeping in darkness of ignorance. They are not awakened. So even though they might be awakened, but materially materially awakened, spiritually sleeping. So actually they are passing the life like a dream. But tasyam jagrati sa nisha pasyato mune. When the self-realized soul goes to take rest in the body, everyone is busy in acting. Means he is neglecting, he is not even seeing them. That is not interested that he should look into the materialistic activity. He is totally aloof. So there are awakened state of the muni and sleeping state of the karmis. On the other behalf, when karmis are awakened, he ignores them, so he sleeps. He doesn't criticize them. He becomes equiposed, but he understands that somehow their dream will be over. He doesn't disturb them. That is Muni's business. A sannyasi is there to encourage and awaken the sleeping souls. Jiva jago, jiva jago, gaura chandra bodhe. Kato nidra, chava maya, pishasi rakoli. My dear sleeping soul, wake up, wake up. How long are you going to sleep in the lap of witch maya? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu calls out that way. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So life is like a dream, but for karmas. And it is not factual. Therefore, the temporary living is based on that part. Only the absolute truth is existing for the advanced devotee. His entire concentration is based on the absolute truth, because he is the practitioner of absolute truth. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9 chapter 4th verse, Maya katamidam jagat sarvam avyakta murtina Masthani sarvabhutani na chashvam teshvavastita. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. How Krishna is keeping himself aloof, even though he keeps everyone intact within himself. He said, I am, means my form, is expanding in the form that is unmanifested. The personal form doesn't have to do anything, but by his internal potency, he is expanding himself into an impersonal aspect that pervades each and every space, each and every atoms, whether it is the chitkana or material kana, the conscious atom that is the living entities, or material atoms, or in between two, it is pervading everywhere. Therefore, everything exists on the basis of Krishna's impersonal feature. Nothing can exist without Krishna. Therefore, the advanced devotee of Krishna can see that the Lord is everywhere without illusion. Rest is illusion. But for a pure devotee who is already set in the confirmation of the Absolute Truth, for him there is no illusion. There is another beautiful explanation Narad Muni gives here. That since the material body is sure to be vanquished, and the duration of one's life is not fixed, neither death nor life is to be praised. Neither death nor the life should be praised. Rather, one should observe the eternal time factor in which the living entity manifests himself and disappears. We get an umar if we get somebody's birth in our house. Wow, somebody has come. Happy birthday to you. And we cut a cake and ice cream. It's all rejoicing. But for a self-realized soul, he neither rejoices at birth, neither rejoices death, or does not lament for anything either, either of that. But what he is seeing, that in between the sustaining life and death is nothing but time, and time is Krishna. It is eternal. So he sees not the temporary thing, but he sees only the eternal aspect of the Absolute Truth. Srila Prabhupada says in purport that living entities in this material world, not only at the present but also in the past, have been involved in trying to solve the problem of birth and death. Some stress death and point to illusory existence of everything material, whereas other stress is life, trying to preserve it perpetually and enjoy the best of their ability. Both of them are fools and rascals. It is advised that one observe the eternal time factor, which is the cause of material body's appearance and disappearance, and that one observes the living entity's entanglement in this time factor. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore sings in Gitavali, Anadir karma phale, pari bhavarnava jale, tari bare na dekhino paaya. One should observe that the activities of eternal time, which is the cause of birth and death, before the creation of the present millennium, the living entities were under influence of the time factor. And within the time factor, the material world comes into existence and is again annihilated. Bhutva bhutva praliyate. Being under the control of time factor, the living entities appear and die, life after life. This time factor is impersonal representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gives the living entity's condition by material nature a chance to emerge from the nature by surrendering it to him. What it means that our life and death experiences must educate us about the time, eternal time that controls us. So, don't despise Maya, but get educated from her workings. Do not try to, you know, overjoy that, okay, you have the chance to do whatever you like. Sometimes even in our daily practice of bhajana kriya, when it seems to be boring, after, people become complacent. In the beginning they are enthusiastic. Yesterday we saw, and after some immature enthusiasm which runs out, and we become complacent. And we try to finish the rounds as far as possible. And once the rounds are finished, we think, big relief, And we claim, yes, now I am done. I chanted my 16 minutes, so I can do anything I like. This is hellish mentality. See, the time factor we have to see. We took whole day for chanting. We took whole day for chanting. Why? We are dragging on and on. If we value the time factor, then we will be the best managers. We will be the best manager. We can manage a company, but not our chanting. What kind of managers are they? So the complacency is lack of enthusiasm and misconception, because material attachments are still hanging around, you know. Instead of looking the time factor to be the eternal motivating for any transformations in us. I mean, time factor is not a transformation from karmi to a devotee life, no. Transformation of our activity, which is due to the time factor. So we should concentrate on that eternal time factor. He is the impersonal form of the Lord. So we value the time. If we value the time, we would not waste it in frivolous activities. We should not misuse the time. Time is so much precious. You cannot get back 1 second that you have spent by millions of dollars. So we should value the time. The highest evaluation is done by such perfected beings, and the sannyasi should not waste time. Therefore they are not supposed to stay for long at one place. Because they value the time. It's not that sannyasi do not have time. They have time, that's why they are appearing, they are coming, they are traveling. They have time. Who said they don't have time? They have time. But we should know that time is very valuable too, and we should know too. Otherwise, both are wrong. Another thing, literature that is useless, waste of time, in other words, literature without spiritual benefit, should be rejected. One should not become a professional teacher as means of earning one's livelihood, nor should one indulge in arguments and counter-arguments, nor should one take shelter of any cause or faction. He should not join the club. A sannyasi is not part of any club. But few sannyasis come together and they make their own club then. Want to hear? So Prabhupada writes, a person desiring to advance in spiritual understanding should be extremely careful to avoid reading ordinary literature. The world is full of ordinary literature that creates unnecessary agitation in the mind. Such literature, including newspapers, dramas, novels and magazines, is factually not meant for advancement in spiritual knowledge. Indeed, it has been described as a piece of enjoyment for crows. Tadvayasam tirtham. It's a pilgrimage for the crows. Anyone advancing in spiritual knowledge must reject such literature. Furthermore, one should not concern oneself with the conclusions of various logicians and philosophers. Of course, those who preach sometimes need to argue with the contentions of opponent. But as much as possible, one should avoid the argumentative attitude. In this connection, Srila Madhvacharya says, there is no need to take shelter of unnecessary literature or concern oneself with so many philosophers and thinkers who are useless for spiritual advancement. Nor should one accept a disciple for the sake of fashion or popularity. One should be callous to the so-called shastras, neither opposing nor favoring them. And one should not earn one's livelihood by taking money for explaining shastra. A sannyasi must always be neutral and seek the means of advance in spiritual life, taking full shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. He is becoming so concentratedly in our repose and the absolute truth. That is his life. But you can see today so many Mayavadi sadhus, Khichdi sadhus, just for the making their daily meal. They can wear gerwa. They wear saffron clothes just to make. No, they were hidden motives. But otherwise, the color is not attractive. And sadhu also keeps beard and everything. And there is no show. Of course, Naga Babas can show. So much attraction during Kumbh Mela. But they have their own prestige of austerity. And they are enamored by that. They said in Kumbh Mela, if Naga Babas are not given first preference to take bath, they think the whole Ganges is polluted by somebody who takes bath before them. That is their prestige issue. And they are violent people. They are violent. They take sword in their hand, trishul, and play games with it. Make up a show. What is their protection? They don't have faith in God. Therefore, they think the Mother Nature is so treacherous in Himalayas, and they inflict so much pain on their body and go through such austerities. But yet, when it comes to prestige issue, they become completely, defensive, offensive, whatever way. So, one should not renounce. It is not the ideal character for such subtle desires or subtle benefits. A sannyasi must not present allurements for material benefits to gather many disciples, nor should he unnecessarily read many books to give discourses as means of livelihood. He must never attempt to increase material opulence unnecessarily. So Prabhupada takes everybody left and right on this issue. Okay, this is important. Avyaktalingo avyaktartho manishinmat balvan kavir mukhvadatmanam sa drashtva darshendranam. Although a saintly person may not expose himself to the vision of human society, by his behavior his purpose is disclosed. To human society he should present himself like a restless child, and although he is the greatest thoughtful orator, he should present himself like a dumb man. We are coming to the ideal behavior. So, this leads to Narad Muni to cite an example that Prahlad, when he was ruling the earth, at that time he came across one person like a Ajagar Vritti, one who has adopted the mentality of a python. Prabhupada, he was walking on the Venice Beach in Los Angeles for morning walk, and he was telling about this particular Ajagar Vritti. You know, people do not understand. So he gave an example. You know, Ajagar means the big snake, the python. What he does, he doesn't want to work hard. He enters the hole of a mouse, eats the mouse, and stays very comfortably there. So he has food and home problems solved. Right? So sannyasi should develop that vritti, anyaga vritti. Means stay at one place. Whatever it comes, take it and be happy. So Prahlad Maharaj is coming to meeting somebody who is exalted by his behavior, but at the same time he has adopted this Ajagar Vritti. He was very perplexed to see a kind of paradox that this man was very fat, like me. So Prahlad Maharaj became furious to ask, who is he, and why he is lying at one place, and why he is so much neglectful of everything, why he is so much satisfied, and why he is undisturbed, and why this. So, it's beautiful conversation. Just listen. So Prahlad Maharaj arrived at the bank of Kaveri, where there was a mountain known as Sahyadri. There he found a great saintly person who was lying on the ground covered with dirt and dust, but who was deeply spiritually advanced. Neither by that saintly person's activities, by his bodily features, by his words, nor by the symptoms of his varnashram status, could people understand whether he was the same person they had known. Means, his entire behavior transformed, so people become completely forgetful that who he was. This advanced devotee Prahlad Maharaj duly worshipped and offered obeisances to the saintly person who had adopted a python's mean of livelihood. After thus worshipping the saintly person and touching his own head to the saintly lotus feet, Prahlad Maharaj, in order to understand him, inquired very submissively as follows. Seeing the saintly person to be quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear sir, you undergo no endeavor to earn your livelihood, but you have a stout body, exactly like that a materialistic enjoyer. I know that if one is very rich, has nothing to do, he becomes extremely fat by eating and sleeping and performing no work. O Brahmana, fully in knowledge of transcendence, you have nothing to do and therefore you are lying down. It is also understood that you have no money for sense enjoyment. How then has your body become so fat? Under the circumstance, if you do not consider my question impudent, kindly explain how this happened. Your honor appears to be learned, expert and intelligent in every way. You can speak very well. Saying these things that are pleasing to the heart, you see that people in general are engaged in futile activities, yet you are lying here inactive. So that Brahman, the Avadhuta, he is speaking, responding. He saying, "O best of the Asura Prahlad Maharaj, who are recognized by advanced and civilized men, you are aware of the different stages of life because of your inherent transcendental eyes, with which you can see a man's character and thus know clearly the results of acceptance and rejectance of things as they are. Both are realized." So both are able to visualize each other's transcendental position. If one is realized and other is not, this conversation cannot take place. It will not come to a conclusive or meaningful even. If somebody asks you, "Have you seen God?" Even if you have seen God, would you tell him? No. Prabhupada was asked this kind of question so often in the beginning. Have you seen God? And Prabhupada would say, "Why should I tell you? Why should I tell you? You don't have eyes to see God. Why should I tell you?" And the person will sit down, can't argue back. So in this way, we should see that who realizes whom. Unless a person is properly realized, he can see the character of such a realized person. We are supposed to find out, you know, pure devotee. Where do I get pure devotee? By becoming pure, you will get pure devotee. He thinks that the pure devotee, if I find somehow or another, he will give me so much mercy that I don't have to do anything and automatically become pure. That is cheating. You are told to become pure. So, Prahlad Maharaj is a realized soul and Brahman is also a realized soul. So, the first and foremost character that of acknowledgement is that because your inherent transcendental eye with which you can see a man's character and thus know clearly the results of acceptance or rejection of the things that they are. Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full of all opulences, is predominant within the core of your heart. And because of your being a pure devotee, he always drives away all the darkness of ignorance, as the sun drives away the darkness of the universe. Prahlad Maharaj is carrying Lord Narayan everywhere within his heart. He can once become realized, a pure devotee never leaves the Lord alone. Wherever he goes, he takes his Lord along with him. That is the word called bhaktya kevalaya. Kechid kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agam dunvanti kashnena niharasya eva bhaskara. This is said in Srimad Bhagavatam itself. Then, kechit kevalaya bhaktya, only by devotional service to the Supreme Personality of God. Vasudeva parayana. Prahlad Maharaj is Vasudeva parayana. Only by devotional service, devotee who becomes Vasudeva parayana. For him, agham dhunvanti kashmeva, all the sinful reactions dissipate. Just like the sun dissipates the mist. So, my dear King, Prahlad Maharaj, you know everything. You have posed some questions, which I shall try to answer according to that, what I have learned by hearing from the authorities. I cannot remain silent in this regard. For a personality like you is just fit to be spoken to by one who aspires self-purification. When a person in Krishna consciousness asks the question, one who is humble wants to answer very readily. He is enthusiastic to answer, just that he may gain from such question by answering. The purport, Srila Prabhupada says, is also very important. A saintly person doesn't mean to speak to anyone and everyone, and he is therefore grave and silent. Generally, a common man does not need to be advised. Unless one is prepared to take instruction, it is said that a saintly person should not address him, although sometimes because of great kindness, a saintly person speaks to ordinary men. As for Prahlad Maharaj, however, since he was not a common man, ordinary man, however, whatever questions he posed would have to be answered, even by the great and exalted personality. Therefore, saintly Brahman did not remain silent, but began to answer. These answers, however, are not concocted by him. This is the indicated by the word yathasrutam, meaning, as I have heard from the authorities. In the parampara system, when the questions are bona fide, the answers are bona fide. No one should attempt to create or manufacture answers. One must refer to the shastras and give answers according to the Vedic understanding. The word yathasrutam refers to the Vedic knowledge. The Vedas are known as Shrutis because the knowledge is received from the authorities. The statement of Vedas are known as Shruti Praman. One should quote evidence from the Shruti or Vedas or Vedic literature, and then one's statements will be correct. Otherwise, one's words will proceed from mental concoction. One must support his statements by quoting the Vedas. The self-realized person will always, for Prabhupada showed us that he would quote, and he told all his followers to quote. Don't simply blur out, heaps of words from the mouth, but speak very precisely, quoting the praman of the shastra to justify the answer. He said, I was an ordinary man and carried by the waves of Maya to satisfy my insatiable desires, and the experiences to those struggles led me to understand something. They say, in this human form of life, when I was conceived, but at the same time during my experiences, I haven't seen that anybody is happy. Therefore, seeing the contrary results, opposite results, I have stopped taking part in the materialistic activity. If the results are contrary, one should not be attached Rather, he should not attach to it. It means that you should not overwork just to gain, which is very difficult to obtain in the material aspect. That is ati prayas varjet. Over endearing becomes detrimental to devotional service. The actual form of life for the living entities is one, spiritual happiness, which is real happiness. This happiness can be achieved only when one stops all material activities. Material sense enjoyment is simply imagination. Therefore, considering this subject matter, I have ceased from material activities and I am lying down here. In this very conditioned soul living within the body forgets himself and the self-interest also, because he identifies himself with the body. Because the body is material, his natural tendency is to be attracted by the varieties of material world. Thus the living entity suffers the miseries of the material existence. So he describes the entanglement of the materialistic activity, and it causes nothing but suffering. That was his experience. The Brahman continued, "I am actually seeing how a rich man who is a victim of his senses is very greedy to accumulate wealth and therefore suffers from insomnia due to fear from all sides despite his wealth and opulence." And Prabhupada gives a big lecture on this. Prabhupada says, greedy capitalists accumulate wealth under so many miserable conditions, the result being that because they collect money by questionable means, their minds are always agitated. Thus they are unable to sleep at night, and they have to take pills for mental tranquility to invite sleep. And sometimes even the pills are a failure. Consequently, a result of having accumulated money for so much labor is certainly not happiness, but only distress. What is the value of acquiring comfortable position if one's mind is always disturbed? Narottam Das Thakur has therefore sung, Sansara Vishanale Divashi Hiya Jole Jurai Tena Koinu Pai. I am suffering from the poisonous effect of material enjoyment. Thus my heart is always burning and almost on the verge of failure. The result of the greedy capitalist's unnecessary accumulation of wealth is that he must suffer from a blazing fire of anxiety and always be concerned with how to save his money and invest it properly to get more and more. Such a life is certainly not very happy. But because of the spell of illusory energy, materialist person engage in such activities. And Prabhupada glorifies Hare Krishna movement. That we are not meant for that. Rather, we'll be satisfied by selling our literature, you know, which is Krishna conscious. And whatever money comes, we'll use for service of Krishna and glorify the Lord. Those who are considered materially powerful and rich are always full of anxiety because of governmental laws. Thieves and rogues, enemies, family members, animals, birds, persons seeking charity, an inevitable time factor, and even their own selves they are afraid of. Thus they are invariably afraid. Why one has to fear himself? when everybody is trying to snatch away his money, he is in anxiety. But here it is said, he is also fearful of himself. Bombarded by so many anxieties, creating factors, he is so confused that he doesn't trust himself. And he thinks, I'll be compelled to make a mistake. Means, I'll become a fool. I'll be putting my money at risk. Because not knowing what is the actual situation. He will invest in some stock market by illusory aspect, by cheating aspect. Somebody may immediately, cheat him. When the lottery comes, and somebody got some millions of dollars of lottery, immediately, he will be exposed, he will think that he is becoming celebrity. But very first question will be asked, what are you going to do with the money? And person start getting baffled. Because neither he has planned, neither he knows. But it means if he doesn't say anything, they say, okay, here we are, we will teach you how to use your money. So that power, a tiny living entity, can be overwhelmed by such power that he cannot control it. You need to put accountants, investors, so many people behind it, and you won't see cash in your hand. You can't eat your money. It's a simply waste of your time, the precious time. He is also making a honeybee and a python to be an instructive spiritual master. The bee and python are two excellent spiritual masters who give us exemplary instruction regarding how to be satisfied by collecting only a little and how to stay in one place and not move. From the bumblebee I have learned to be unattached to accumulating money, for although money is as good as honey, anyone can kill its owner and take it away. One congregational devotee asked me this question. Why should devotee eat honey? Do you know how it is prepared? By killing the bees. How can we eat? I said, why? The bees cannot fly out. They use smoke to discourage the bees coming. He says, no. Nasty. So, that's bad. Anyway, there's the same thing is there. That honeybee is not attached to the accumulation of his, because probably in heaven, she knows. Therefore, this Brahmana said that I do not endeavor to get anything, but I am satisfied with whatever is achieved in its own way. If I do not get anything, I am patient and unagitated like a python and lie down in this way for many days. Sometimes I eat a small quantity and sometimes a great quantity. Sometimes the food is very palatable and sometimes it is stale. Sometimes prasad is offered with great respect and sometimes food is given neglectfully. Sometimes I eat during the day and sometimes at night. Thus I eat whatever is easily available. To cover my body, I use whatever is available, whether it be linen, silk, cotton, bark or deer skin, according to my destiny, and I am fully satisfied and unagitated. Sometimes I lie on the surface of earth and sometimes on the leaves. grass or stone, and sometimes on the pile of ashes, and sometimes by the will of others in a palace on a first-class bed and pillow. Oh my Lord, sometimes I bite my ears very nicely, smear sandalwood pulp over my body, put on the flower garland and dress in fine garments and ornaments. Then I travel like a king on the back of an elephant or a chariot or a horse, and sometimes, however, I travel naked like a person haunted by a ghost. Both the paradoxes. One has to be indifferent. So different people are of different mentalities. Therefore, it is not my business either to praise them or to blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare, hoping that they will agree to become one with the Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna. The mental concoction and discrimination between good and bad should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind, which should then be invested in the false ego, and the false ego should be invested in the total material energy. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. This is the process we have been learning, even in the previous chapter, you know, that ideally, whatever emergence in the material conception is there, the same process we have to reverse it, right? So in this way, one becomes self-realized. So he is telling, Prahlad Maharaj, you are certainly a self-realized soul and a devotee of the Supreme Lord. You do not care for public opinion or so-called scriptures. For this reason, I have described to you without hesitation the history of my self-realization. Only a self-realized soul can describe the self-realized soul. And he would not expose to anybody. So, in this way we can understand something of the ideal behavior. Ideal behavior, in short, constitutes indifference. And indifference comes by tolerance in Krishna consciousness. Plain and simple. And sannyasi is supposed to show that ideal behavior. So, any question or comments? Is there some program after 4:30 here?
There is a Bhakti Yoga Vatna Shila Guden at 7:30, and between 7:30 and 4:30 there is a Saturday lecture.
Oh, your department. Why is it necessary to have an ideal character amongst us? Why we always hanker to see the character of an ideal person in a guru? In other words, can anybody answer? Why is it important to seek for a guru for the ideal character?
Because otherwise we'd probably the person would probably look to a person who is an ideal who is a bad character. So people sort of need to learn from someone, so it's probably better if it's a person who's of a good character other than someone with a bad character, so basically.
Because if one is bona fide spiritual master, we can follow instruction very easily. Looking for complete faith and conviction.
Because he is practicing and then teaching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Acharya.
Right. If devotees think that, oh, nobody can become ideal devotee, therefore they reject so-called leaderships, will want to prefer only becoming Ritviks. Do you think it's an ideal leader? Ritviks are not at all ideal. How come they become leader? They don't want to take the responsibility of ideal behavior. They want to attribute everything to Srila Prabhupada and make that Srila Prabhupada will not be able to make any ideal behavior. Because they can't, nobody can. This is called Ritvicism. What's the difference? You will see, they will rather demoralize the character, they will rather, you know, expose a Vaishnava attitude. Where is the question of fulfilling Prabhupada's desire? There is no ideal behavior. Even today, after formation of so-called revival movement, they have not been revived. So, neither they are practicing ideal behavior. How is it possible that their case can even be heard or put forward or tackled? So this is an important aspect. If ideal behavior is not there, then there are every chances of deviations. And the cause of spiritual emancipation will be further thrown away. Are the Ritviks here too? Or no? There are no Ritviks here. You are lucky. But we have in Vrindavan, we have in New York, we have in London. There are so many places. They are in Singapore.
Bangalore.
I forgot. There's a breeding ground. So anyway, the Varnashram system depends upon ideal character. And then, unless and until ideal character emerges out, it is anticipated, then and then the Devi Varnashram system can be. Therefore, the salient features of Devi Varnashram system have been described, and there the responsibility falls on the ideal behavior to carry out further. And therefore, sannyasis are on the top of that social, the four social orders and divisions. what we are trying to take tomorrow, the ideal family life, according to Vedic Varnashram system, plus we should have a brainstorming session for the applications. So everybody should participate in that. Please bring paper and pencil. Tomorrow it will be more useful for such an exercise. And we should come to some kind of pros and cons and interesting. And then we'll try to, you know, confine the, what is meant by ideal family. Alright? Thank you very much. All the best, Srila Prabhupada.